Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, we're going to take a journey of healing. The latest on reversing the aging process and preventing heart disease and cancer. Then we're going to have a guest, Carrie Gillum, who is going to talk about Roundup glyphosate and how Monsanto hides health risks and corrupt science and censor scientists and manipulates politicians and the public. Also today, we're going to have some audio clips. We're going to hear from Robert Reich about the 20 broken promises that Trump has made to the voters. That's good, but he should have also done the same for Obama. What were the promises Obama made that he broke? So I selected just at random 20. There were over 100. And so we'll show you where both presidents promised and didn't deliver. They could have. They chose not to. Also today, one more challenge back at you for the corruption of intellect at the New York Times when they're trying to sell us another weapons of mass destruction lie about North Korea sending poisonous gas to Syria or the mechanism science for them to do it, when Syria isn't manufacturing or using any toxic gas, but the U.S.-backed terrorists that we call the Free Syrian Army are using them. But we're going to have someone who's on the ground in Syria who has seen the proof as a response. So those are our issues. I will do more if we have time, but let's get right into the latest on health and healing. There is a study from the University of Illinois published in Psychological Science, the journal of the Association for Psychological Science. It talks about behavior in the real world is affected by video games. The debate on whether video games influence behavior in real life has raged for some time. Now a new study involving college students demonstrates that playing a villain in a virtual and reality environment encourages individuals to punish anonymous strangers. Now there are other studies that have suggested negative side effects associated with video games, and recent research suggests violent video games reduce self-control in teens. Meanwhile, another study found that taking away video games does not actually improve children's activity levels. And one study suggested active video games provides an alternative type of exercise. So there is a spectrum of belief on this. And, quote, our results indicate that just 5 minutes of role-playing in virtual environments as either a hero or a villain can easily cause people to reward or punish anonymous strangers. Now, why is this important? Because one of the most popular video games is the most violent, the call to actions. Now, when you see teenagers, even younger than teen years, playing these, it's always about how many people you kill, how much blood you can splatter, different ways of annihilating the enemy. So in one sense, we can say that we have desensitized two entire generations to what actually happens when people inflict pain upon others. It's always different if your perspective is that of the passive and safely ensconced person behind the scenes. It's much like porn. A person who does not have a vital and authentic sex life will use porn as a substitute. And millions, tens of millions of Americans do that. Now, I'm not criticizing anyone for using porn. I'm just making an observation that in the real world, wouldn't it be nicer to be able to have a partner that you could share your fantasies and fetishes, whatever it is, and enjoy yourself with a consenting adult in ways that are fulfilling and satisfying. but very few people can say that. Instead, people, for whatever reason, legitimate or not, use porn. And what happens when you see porn where you can select any porn you want? Now imagine then, if you're not responsible for what happens to the other person, will it desensitize you if you see people being abused in porn? And what happens when we live so much in social media and virtual reality, we're disconnected from the real reality of relating every day? So when we see mass shooters, we're not looking at the total picture. That's something we have neither the maturity or the honest intellect to do at this time in our history. If we did, then long ago, when the first mass shooters began to emerge, we would have asked, what makes this generation, since we've always had rifles, what's different? Well, there's several things. First, not quality time spent with parents. Secondly, a lot of psychiatric diagnoses that are false, but the drugs are very real, and the causes of a person's mental activities is directly related to those drugs. You can take a normal person and turn them into a delusional psychotic. You can take a happy, pleasant person and turn them into a raging killer. You can take a person that's never had a suicidal thought and now they're putting a gun in their mouth wanting to blow their brains out. This is real. And the scholarship on this showing over 90% of all mass killers were on some form of psychiatric medication has been avoided. Why are we not willing to look at this, talk about it, examine it, debate it, have open and civil discourse? But we're not. And because a lot of people would feel the guilt and shame of having allowed their children to become vessels of the state, where a doctor, an institutionist, a social worker decides what the state of your child's health is and not you. And then we also have to ask ourselves, how good is the parenting? I believe that the last generation, now there are exceptions, let's be very clear about that. How many exceptions? We have no way of knowing. But I believe that the last generation to have universally good parenting was my family, meaning my mother and father, your mother and father, all of your mother and fathers who were born before or during the Great Depression. We were the baby boomers, and they had suffered. They suffered from privations. They had no social safety net, but they did have something that we don't seem to have today or don't value today. They had their churches. They had their communities. They had their relatives. And they had the power of their family. They saved because money was in short supply. They were frugal. They did not feel encumbered emotionally by accepting hand-me-downs. I wore my older brother's clothes that my mother would alter for me, and then my younger brother would get my clothes. That was simply unaccepted. We open up a closet and you'd be lucky to have 3 shirts and 2 pair of pants. But we didn't feel deprived because the core of our being was, are we accepted and loved and appreciated as a human being? The answer was yes. So as long as our fathers and mothers were able to provide us with food and a home, the educational system was absolutely excellent. Perfect? No. But the teachers were just phenomenal teachers. I never remember any of them ever retiring. They taught until they died. Some taught our parents, then us, then our children. They taught for 40, 50 years. It was not unheard of at all. They were essential members of the community, and people really appreciated them. One of the things that you valued when you were looking back on your life was the relationship you had and the guidance you were given, the patience, the understanding that came from that wise man and woman who was your teacher. They were beloved. Far cry from today. Not that we don't have good teachers. We have some exemplary teachers, but not exemplary working conditions, curriculum, and top-heavy administrators who have abused the system. It has become corrupted, both by the heads of the unions and the system itself. And the whole idea is, do we want to raise a child to be a critical thinker? And the answer is, we don't care. We should. So imagine what parenting is like today versus when you and I were growing up. I'll bet many of you found that the word character popped up a lot. I remember Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, Cub Scouts, Sea Scouts. Those were all ways of showing that we could be disciplined, focused, and grow. Not so much today. So when we have children today who are disconnected and desensitized to what it feels like to be the other who may not be in the same social class, economic class, educational class, ethnicity class, religious class, as we are, how do we perceive that person? As an annoyance? With respect? As the other? That also is a part of what causes someone to feel that they have no compunction about hurting other people. Now put that triangulation together. Put someone who has not had a mother and father, which we need, and to that generation, and one person who's possibly listening today, they will remember a conversation that I had, because it was the last conversation we had. We were friends, and professional friends, and this person was at that time a very successful physician, and from Harvard, and had all the right background and credentials, and seemed to have an awful lot going. And I remember the day the person called and said, I'm adopting a kid. And I said, why? Well, because that's what's missing in my life. And I said, you have a full-time career. You're working almost 6 days a week, and then you're up to your eyeballs in social responsibilities with all these groups that want you on board because of your background and your reputation. And I said, where exactly in that life will a kid fit? And I said, you remember last year when your dog was put down, instead of calling me and asking me, could I save it, which I could have, your tears were because you never gave the dog any time. You were always too busy. You hired people to come and walk your dog in the morning, afternoon, and then at night. So when you got home and the dog was there for you, you weren't there all day for the dog. Then when you lost the dog, you felt the grief. But you didn't feel the remorse of having abandoned a creature, a sentient creature that was there 100% for you. You just weren't there in return. And so I said to this person, I said, the risk of offending you, I need to share this. There is a group of people today, men and women, who feel that they are successful enough, wealthy enough, accomplished enough, generally in their 40s or 50s, that they can have a kid, either a maternal kid that they are impregnated, or to, in effect, adopt one. But unless you're willing to give something up from your career, so that child becomes the center of your life, then you'll be both abusive to the child and what you neglect, because neglect is abuse. And with that, the person hung up the phone, slammed it down, and I was never hear from that person again. That was 20 years ago. I did hear recently. The person called me. 1 o'clock in the morning. You awake? Yeah, I'm sitting here at my desk. I need to speak with someone. Speak. Well, and then went on to talk about that child they had adopted. Hates her, despises her, haven't spoken to her in a year. And I said, why? Well, and then immediately started to defend herself as if it somehow was the child's fault. And I said, think of all the times that the child needed you and you weren't there because you were at a meeting, you were at a dinner, you were receiving an award, you were lecturing. You had so many things, but you would have a nanny. Kids don't want nannies. Kids want their mother and father. And you chose not to have a man. You felt that men were not necessary. You could do it all. The superwoman. Well, how'd that work out for you? You want to see millions of kids who are emotionally limited because some arrogant person felt that they had all it takes because they were successful? And they didn't have all that it takes. We are so filled with this existential sense of self that we are omnipotent. We can do anything. Well, raising a kid doesn't require arrogance. It requires an understanding of what it is to be that kid. So before we say that it was just the guns, why don't we look at the quality of parenting that has been abysmal? I mean, despicable, deplorable, rotten to the core in so many homes. And the worst of the worst are the successful parents. Because then your kid is not a human, sentient being. It is a trophy to put on, my kid won, and my kid did this, and my kid's valedictorian. Yeah, and what happened to them being a kid? Shame on. If you're not spiritually mature enough to bring a child into this world, don't. Let someone who still has the humility and grace and patience and discipline to stay with that kid and be a part of that kid's life until the kid is no longer needing that parent input. And give them the guidance, give them the input, give them the sense of morality, give them the sense of character, give them the sense of emotional and spiritual discipline. Let them know they're not the center of the universe. Let them know that there's cause and effect. Let them know that selfishness and conceit and projection and all can adversely affect them and will at some point or others in this world. So we have to add that in. Then we have to add in the psychiatric meds. So when you add in bad parenting, absentee parenting, you add in social circumstances and conditioning, you add in the meds, then you start to understand the violence of video games, then what might be going on in a child's mind that you have no control over. Until we can have that conversation, everything else we do will not work. Next up, new nutrition review studies cholesterol-lowering potential of certain probiotics. This is from Nutrition Review. And it shows that probiotics can lower your cholesterol. Who knew? This is new information. Now, heart disease is the leading cause of death worldwide. And an elevated LDL cholesterol is a major risk factor. And 91% of adults don't know about their cholesterol, are clueless of what it is, especially their LDL or their HDL and triglycerides. So by having probiotics each day, you're able to have healthier cholesterol. And a nutrient that rarely is discussed is vitamin B12. We need vitamin B12. Why? Because deficiencies can cause anxiety, movement abnormalities, constipation, lethargy, and weakness, fatigue, depression, even suicidal thoughts. So you should be having about, ideally, 1 milligram of methylated B12 per day. Now, methylation, methylation, that's the process of marking genes for expression. Like little readme signs, it is also critical for detox and elimination of chemicals and hormones like estrogen and building and metabolizing neurotransmitters and producing energy in cell membranes. That's what methylation does. And the homocysteine cycle is really important because vitamin B12 is a primary player in the one carbon cycle and the cofactor for methylation. And it helps activate folate. And if homocysteine goes high, you have a risk of a heart attack. By having B1, B2, B6, folic acid, and B12, you lower your risk of homocysteine being elevated, and you reduce your risk of having a heart attack or stroke. So make sure you're getting it. Also, there's a new study published in a major journal, the Journal of the American College of Cardiology, that shows that the omega-3 fatty acids, the one that we talk a lot about on this show and advocate that you have at least 500 milligrams a day, ideally three times a day, according to the study, quote, there is compelling evidence from 40,000 participants in this omega-3 fatty acid study that it will make a difference in protecting your heart, ideally 1,000 milligrams. So this is an important study. Take your omega-3 fatty acids and help your heart. And finally, from Reuters is a report about a study from Charles Hall, doctor at Albert Einstein College of Medicine, and these colleagues found that every day per week that a person engaged in one of six mental stimulating leisure activities delayed the onset of dementia by 2 months. Wow. You mean every week delays it by 2 months? Yes. And that is exercising the mind. Now, there are many ways of doing that. Learning new words, learning more languages, learning to play instruments, anything that really challenges that cognitive reserve is going to help you and prevent dementia. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Neurology. So challenge your mind. Stop being passive. Become active. I'm Gary Noll. That's 21 minutes into our show on the latest in health and healing. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Noll. As you know, there's a major push now positioning the United States to intervene in Iran, to have another Cold War, hot war against Russia and China. We are just a warmongering nation, and most people don't seem to care one way or the other because it doesn't impact their daily lives. But now they're doing the whole weapons of mass destruction propaganda campaign all over again, this time against Syria. And they're saying, including the New York Times, well, they're, you know, using gas. No, they're not. But have they been in Syria? No. Here is someone who has been challenged at a conference by a journalist who was a pro-war journalist, and this is what Eva Bartlett, the Canadian journalist, had to say about the U.S. funding terrorism and what was really going on in Syria.
Facts that we see from the ground.
International organizations on the ground. Tell me which ones are on the ground in Eastern Aleppo. Yeah, okay, I'll tell you, there are none. There are none. These organizations are relying on the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, which is based in Coventry, UK, and which is one man. They're relying on compromised groups like the White Helmets, which let's talk about the White Helmets. The White Helmets were founded in 2013 by a British ex-military officer. They have been funded to the tune of $100 million by the US, UK, and Europe, and other states. They purport to be rescuing civilians in Eastern Aleppo and Idlib, yet no one in Eastern Aleppo has heard of them. The White Helmets purport to be neutral, yet they can be found carrying guns and standing in the dead bodies of Syrian soldiers. And their video footage actually contains children that have been recycled in different reports. So you can find a girl named Aya who turns up in a report in month, say, August, and she turns up in the next month in two different locations. So they are not credible. The SOHR is not credible. Unnamed activists are not credible. Your sources on the ground, you don't have them. The agenda of some corporate media, it is the agenda of regime change. How can the New York Times, I was reading it this morning, or how can Democracy Now!, which I was reading the other day, maintain until this day that this is a civil war in Syria? How can they maintain until this day that there were that the protests were unarmed and nonviolent until, say, 2012? That is absolutely not true. How can they maintain that the Syrian government is attacking civilians in Aleppo when every person that's coming out of these areas occupied by terrorists is saying the opposite? While the Syrians and while the Russians adhered to the tenets of the ceasefire, but the American-led coalition itself violated the ceasefire by targeting Syrian army positions in Deir ez-Zor, killing at least 83 Syrian soldiers in a prolonged attack that lasted nearly 1 hour and which enabled ISIS to overtake that position. What you hear in the corporate media, and I will name them, BBC, Guardian, New York Times, etc., on Aleppo is also opposite of reality. And they have manufactured stories, and I can give you a precise account. In April of this year, there was a hospital called the Al-Quds Hospital, which in a concerted effort, all media said was attacked and targeted and badly damaged by either the Syrians or the Russians. In fact, the Russians had satellite imagery showing that this hospital was in the same shape that it was in October 2015. No difference. Therefore, it was not attacked. Months later, The Guardian, which is a prominent British newspaper, actually said the Al-Quds Hospital that it had alleged months prior to be attacked and destroyed was treating victims of so-called chemical weapons attacks. So even the media that is lying is inconsistent in their lies. And hopefully, above all, the US will stop supporting terrorism and stop funding terrorism.
Now, here's the difference. All the pundits from Rachel Maddow and all the people over at CNN, Anderson Cooper, they haven't been on the ground in Aleppo. Eva Bartlett has. She is a person who's not an opportunist, not looking to cash in on the reputation or family connections for a lucrative career as long as they become the propaganda mouthpiece for the corporate liberal democratic community. There's so few ethical journalists left and none in the mainstream media. So we're just telling you now, as I did in 2003 before the invasion, when they said that their informant called Curveball had already been unmasked as a fraud. Prior to that, we talked about it. There are no weapons of mass destruction in Syria. They're not using it on their own people. This is the power of the CIA and the people it influences or controls in the mainstream media. Now, here's a person who makes a lot of sense. I respect Robert Reich. I believe he's a person of integrity. I only wish that what he did with Trump, which was deserved, he would have done to Obama, but he didn't. So I have. So let's hear what he has to say about the 20 broken promises that Trump made to his voter base, and then I'll give you the 20 that Obama made and also broke.
1 year in, here are 20 broken promises to you Trump voters. Number one, he told you he'd cut your taxes and that the super rich like him would pay more.
I think there's very little benefit for people of wealth.
You bought it. But his new tax law does the opposite. By 2027, according to the nonpartisan Tax Policy Center, the richest 1% will have got 83% of the tax cut, and the richest 0.1%, 60% of it. But more than half of all Americans, 53%, will pay more in taxes. As Trump told his wealthy friends at Mar-a-Lago just days after the tax bill became law, you all just got a lot richer. Number two, he promised to close
special interest loopholes that have been so good for Wall Street investors, but unfair to American workers.
Especially the notorious carried interest loophole for private equity, hedge fund, and real estate partners. You bought it. But the new tax law keeps the carried interest loophole. Number three, he told you he'd repeal Obamacare and replace it with something
beautiful.
You bought it. But he didn't repeal, and he didn't replace. Just as well, his plan would have knocked at least 23 million Americans off health insurance, including many of you. Instead, he's doing what he can to cut it back and replace it with nothing. The new tax law will result in 13 million people losing health coverage, according to the Congressional Budget Office. Number four, he told you he'd invest $1 trillion in our nation's crumbling infrastructure. You bought it. But after his giant tax cut for corporations and millionaires, there's no money left for infrastructure. Number five, he said he'd drain the Washington swamp.
We are going to drain the swamp in Washington, D.C.
You bought it. But he's brought into his administration more billionaires, CEOs, and Wall Street moguls than in any administration in history to make laws that will enrich their businesses. And he's filled departments and agencies with former lobbyists, lawyers, and consultants who are crafting new policies for the same industries they recently worked for. Number six, he said he'd use his business experience to whip the White House into shape. You bought it. But he has created the most dysfunctional, backstabbing White House in modern history and has already fired and replaced so many assistants, one of them hired and fired in a little more than a week, that people there barely know who's in charge of what. Number seven, he told you he'd bring down drug prices.
We are going to get drug prices, prescription drug prices, way down.
By making deals with drug companies, you bought it. But now the White House says that promise is inoperative. Number eight, he promised a complete ban on foreign lobbyists raising money for American elections. You bought it. But foreign lobbyists are still raising money for American elections. Number nine, he told you...
I'm not going to cut Social Security like every other Republican, and I'm not going to cut Medicare or Medicaid.
You bought it. But he and House Speaker Paul Ryan are already planning such cuts in order to deal with a ballooning deficit created in part by the new tax law for corporations and the rich. Number 10, he promised 6 weeks of paid maternity leave to any mother with a newborn child whose employer does not provide the benefit.
We can provide 6 weeks of paid maternity leave to any mother
yes.
with a newborn child whose employer does not provide the benefit.
You bought it, but the giant tax cut for corporations and the rich doesn't leave any money for this. Number 11, he said that on day one...
We are going to label China a currency manipulator.
You bought it. But then he met with China's president, Xi Jinping, and declared China is not a currency manipulator. Ever since then, Trump has been cozying up to Xi. Number 12, he said he wouldn't bomb Syria. You bought it. Then he bombed Syria. Number 13, he said he'd build a wall across the southern border. You believed him. But Chief of Staff John Kelly says it's unlikely that we will build a wall, a physical barrier, from sea to shining sea. Number 14, he promised that the many women who accused him of sexual misconduct will be sued after the election is over.
All of these liars will be sued after the election is over.
You bought it. He hasn't sued them, presumably because he doesn't want the truth to come out. Number 15, he said he would not be a president who took vacations.
I promise you, I will not be taking very long vacations if I take them at all. There's no time for vacation.
And he called Barack Obama the vacationer-in-chief. You bought it. But since becoming president, he has spent nearly 25% of his days at one of his golf properties for some portion of the day, according to Golf News Network, at a cost to taxpayers of over $77 million. That's already more taxpayer money on vacations than Obama cost in the first 3 years of his presidency. Not to mention all the money taxpayers are spending protecting his family, including his two sons who travel all over the world on Trump business. Number 16, he said he'd force companies to keep jobs in America and that there would be consequences for companies that shipped jobs abroad.
Companies are not going to leave the United States anymore without consequences. Not going to happen.
But you believed him. But despite their promises, Carrier, Ford, GM, and the rest have continued to ship jobs to Mexico and China. Carrier, a division of United Technologies, has moved ahead with plans to send 1,000 jobs at its Indiana plant to Mexico. Notwithstanding, the federal government has rewarded United Technologies with 15 new contracts since Trump's inauguration. GE is sending jobs to Canada, IBM is sending them to Costa Rica, Egypt, Argentina, and Brazil. There have been no consequences for sending all these jobs overseas. Number 17, he promised to revive the struggling coal industry and bring back thousands of lost coal mining jobs. You bought it. But coal jobs continued to disappear. Since Trump's victory, at least six plants that relied on coal have closed or announced they will close. Another 40 are projected to close during the president's four-year term. Utilities continue to switch to natural gas instead of coal, and renewable energy is cheaper than ever. Number 18, he promised to protect steel workers.
We will put new American steel into the spine of our country.
But according to the American Iron and Steel Institute, which tracks shipments, steel imports were 19.4% higher in the first 10 months of 2017 than in the same period the year before. That import surge has hurt American steelworkers, who are already struggling against a glut of cheap Chinese steel. Number 19, he said he'd make America safer. You believed him. But according to Mass Shooting Tracker, there were 427 mass shootings in 2017, including 58 people killed and hundreds injured at a concert in Las Vegas, and 26 churchgoers killed and 20 injured at a church in Texas. Trump refuses to consider any gun control legislation. Number 20, he said he'd release his taxes.
I'm under a routine audit, and it'll be released, and as soon as the audit's finished, it'll be released.
He said during the campaign, he hasn't released his taxes.
Now, and that's well done, and we need to know that. Here are Obama's promises. He was going to close Guantanamo. He didn't. Single-payer health care. He promised universal health care. He didn't. And create a contract and influence database tracking and disclose how much federal contractors spend on lobbying. He didn't. End no-bid contracts above $25,000. They increased. Eliminate all oil and gas tax loopholes and special tax breaks. They expanded. Create a $60 billion bank to fund roads and bridges. Never happened. Expand child and dependent care credit. Didn't happen. Require publicly traded financial partnerships to pay the corporate income tax. Didn't happen. Close loopholes in the corporate tax deductibility of CEO pay. Didn't happen. Create a $10 billion foreclosure prevention fund for homeowners. No. Forbid companies to bank in bankruptcy from giving executive bonuses. No. Create a refundable tax credit equal to 10% of mortgage interest for non-itemizers, up to a maximum of $800. No. Restore habeas corpus rights. No. Create a retirement savings tax credit for low incomes. No. End income tax for seniors making less than $50,000. No. Sign the Employee Free Choice Act, making it easier for workers to unionize. No. Allow imported prescription drugs, prevent drug companies from blocking generic drugs, and allow Medicare to negotiate for cheaper drugs. No. Fully fund the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act for educating children with disabilities. No. Provide $1.5 billion fund to help states launch programs for paid family and medical leave. No. Expand the Family Medical Leave Act to include leave for domestic violence and sexual assault? No. Form an international group to help Iraqi refugees? No. Work with Russia to remove nuclear weapons off hair trigger alert? No. Allow 5 days of public comment before signing bills? No. You see, they're all guilty. I'm Gary Knoll. Before we go to our guest in just a few minutes, I want to offer you something unique. Something we've never offered before. But I actually have two things. I also was just told that our supremacy, our Supreme Health formula is back in stock. We introduced it, brand new formula, the most comprehensive, all-inclusive, really power-packed vitamin mineral supplement ever created, the best I could possibly do, and we sold out. And we only got 500 bottles in, and we sold them out. So we've been out of the product for some time now. Today, it just came back in. And instead of you having to pay for a month's supply of these ingredients and these potencies, $486, you're only paying $65. I think it's $65. In any case, it's a phenomenal discount. These are in capsules, vegan capsules, so they digest immediately. You're getting coenzyme Q10 and quercetin and pycnogenol and ginkgo and green tea and glutathione and phosphatidylserine and lutein and N-acetylcysteine and choline bitartrate, inositol, bromelain, melatonin, acetyl-L-carnitine, and that's just beginning to go into here. Equal amounts of calcium magnesium from citrate at 500 milligrams, B12, and folate, and folic acid. You're getting natural vitamin E and vitamin A, vitamin C, and in buffered form. Now, all the B vitamins, you're getting everything that I believe your body needs, but this is kind of like the Rolls Royce of supplements. This isn't one that you'll find in a normal health food store or a drug store. No. This is the best of the best. And we got 1,500 bottles in. So that's about a 3-week supply based upon people purchasing. So if you'd like to get what I consider the finest, most comprehensive multiple and mineral vitamin and special nutrients, the superstar nutrients, it's on sale. Just got them in today. Here's the number to call, 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. And keep in mind, almost every single study that I see shows that people are deficient in different nutrients, and there can be substantial consequences to your biochemistry when you're deficient in vitamin D and B12. Well, if you're not going to change to an ideal diet, if you're not having 6 glasses of fresh organic juice a day and eating a plant-based diet and exercising, I made this supplement with the idea that probably 90% of my audience are listening, they're good people, but they're not doing everything they need to do. This is that health insurance. This is what you need to do. So take this Supreme Health Formula, the vegan capsules, every morning, just once a day, all right? And I'm giving it to you at a phenomenal price, phenomenal. Call 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065. I'm sorry that we have been selling out of it, but we didn't anticipate this, and it wasn't easy to find a manufacturer who would follow my formulas. This is not a tablet. This is a capsule with a lot of different ingredients at high potencies. And we found someone who would make it to our standards, and they have. So this way, at least each day, you know you're doing something really, really good for your health. Or make sure that if someone else you love is not doing the best they could, get them to at least take this each morning. The Supreme Health Formula. I know of no supplement in the world that comes even close to the quality and integrity and potency and synergistic blending as the Supreme Health Formula. And it's a big discount. Call 877-627-5065. We're going to take a break. Come back with my guest. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. We should be very concerned about the quality of the ingredients in a product, like a vegetable. Was anything sprayed on it? What was the quality of the soil it was grown in? Is there pollution nearby? If you have an organic farm on one side of a road and a regular commercial farm growing, let's say, genetically engineered soybeans and having glyphosate sprayed on it, that's going to take to the wind and come over your field. You may not even know it. Studies have shown that we are massively contaminated with glyphosate or Roundup. Joining us to share some insight into this is Carrie Gilliam. Carrie Gilliam is on Skype from Overland, Illinois, is a veteran environmental and food and agricultural journalist and investigative reporter, who has been traveling around the nation for years to observe and report on the state of America's food system and farming and meeting with U.S. regulators and lawmakers and scientists and for over 20 years. And she is the research director of U.S. Right to Know, which is a nonprofit organization devoted to exposing the truth about industrial agriculture and the threats of pesticides and GMOs and big agriculture in general on our health. Nice to have you with us today.
Thanks for having me, Gary.
I have four areas I'd like for you to go after. Take your time. The four areas, I'll start with the first. Explain why we should be concerned about glyphosate, especially since the Monsanto has been able to align itself with scientists at universities who come forth to the media and say that it's a non-starter. There's no problem with glyphosate. Explain to us how the corporate interest are able to hire scientists to speak on their behalf. So it's not good science they're showing, it's propaganda. The forum is yours.
Oh, thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Yes, great. All right. Sure. So glyphosate, as you mentioned, is a real concern right now globally, not just here in the United States, but in Europe and Argentina and elsewhere, primarily because it's the world's most widely used agrochemical. It's used, widely by farmers in agriculture in producing our food. And so we not only have exposure through the environment, done only to farm workers, but it's also in our water. It's commonly found in surface waters. It's found in our drinking water, but it's also found in the food that we consume. Residues are commonly found in, a whole array of different types of foods. It's used in growing, corn and soybeans, certainly, but also in orchards and in with avocados and almonds and cherries and it's very, very widely used with our wheat and our oats. It is pervasive in our environment. And over the years, since it's been in use about 44 years now, since 1974, research has been done around the world, epidemiology, toxicology studies, and other types of research that have linked exposure to a variety of illnesses and disease, including different types of cancer, most notably non-Hodgkin lymphoma. And because this is so widely used and found in our drinking water, found in our food, found in our environment, we are all exposed. There are studies that show most people, if you go have your urine tested, you're going to have this weed killer in your urine. It's that ubiquitous. So people, of course, are concerned about this. Now, Monsanto and the agrochemical companies that also sell glyphosate in their products, really push back and say, no, this is the safest, thing out there, the safest type of weed killer available. And as you mentioned, they've had a pretty strategic endeavor over the years to convince consumers and regulators, lawmakers, that it is really safe. And part of that, has included enlisting the help of academics, different university professors and others who, you would trust. You think they're working for us, the taxpayers. They work at state-funded universities, and we should be able to trust them. But what we found through our research is that there are many of these academics whose programs are funded. They receive, money, grants, and other sources of funding from Monsanto and the agrochemical industry. And they not only receive funding, but they a lot of times receive very specific direction as to what to say, what to write, what types of presentations to make, who to present them to, in terms of lobbying, essentially, for the safety of these chemicals and the genetically engineered crops that the companies are so married to as well. And they do all of this without disclosing their ties and their funding from the agrochemical industry. So, it's very disturbing because it really is a deceit upon the American public, and it does not allow for informed and transparent public debate about policies. And that's really a lot of the work that I've been doing, and that's, what I lay out in my book, Whitewash.
All right, let's take a little further. Let's talk about corruption at the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. It's supposed to be there to protect us from environmental contaminants. Tell us about how there has been an influence from the top down, and especially now where you have an anti-science president selecting anti-science people to head science projects.
Yeah, and this is really worrisome. What we've seen through, again, through the documents, and through interviews, is that the EPA really does work very closely with these agrochemical companies and often collaborate, some might say collude with these companies like Monsanto, in ways that protect their chemicals that they're selling, ways that really protect their ability to keep them on the market, to limit any sort of restrictions and maximize profits. And, you know, specifically with Monsanto, there are many examples that we've seen revealed through internal emails and other communications. We see Monsanto emailing talking points, for instance, to the EPA about how to talk about cancer concerns about glyphosate. We see evidence, very detailed evidence of Monsanto working with top EPA officials to make a toxicology review of glyphosate essentially disappear, go away. That was something Monsanto talked about, how worried they were about it, how concerned they didn't want it to happen. And you see them in these documents asking the EPA for help and essentially then getting that help, and this review goes away. We, you know, there are many different examples, I guess, with that. And of course, it's not just Monsanto, right? I mean, Dow just got a great big favor from EPA by making the ban on chlorpyrifos go away, this very dangerous insecticide that science tells us hurts babies' brains. And it was scheduled to be banned in 2017. And Dow gave some money to the Trump Inaugural Fund and sat down with Dow and the new head of the EPA folks, and that ban went away. So I don't think corruption is too strong of a word, certainly, when it comes to dealing with EPA. Although I do want to say, I've interviewed many folks. We have some really good scientists within the EPA, you know, who are working hard to look at the science and to warn the public and protect the public. But a lot of times they get overruled by people, you know, in the higher echelons of management there.
Carrie, talk about the manipulation of science.
Well, you know, I mean, what happens at the EPA is one example of that. I can give you many examples. Let's start with 1983 and glyphosate. Monsanto, there was a 1983 mouse study that Monsanto paid to have done, and they gave to the EPA. Monsanto said it showed the safety of glyphosate. The EPA toxicologist said the opposite. They said it showed rare tumors developing in mice, you know, that were exposed to glyphosate, and no tumors in the control groups of mice that didn't receive any glyphosate exposure. And they said it looked like, you know, it could be possibly cancer-causing. And Monsanto pushed back, and this became a long, drawn-out years worth of battles with Monsanto essentially telling the EPA to change its interpretation of the scientific research. And the EPA asked Monsanto to redo the study. Monsanto refused and just kept insisting that its own interpretation and its own hired pathologist should be trusted over the EPA scientist. And eventually that's what occurred. We also see evidence of ghostwriting. Monsanto, through its internal documents that we've obtained, discusses how they ghostwrite scientific reviews, papers that assert the safety of this chemical and contradict other independent scientific reviews. And these, again, appear, like with the academics, these appear to be independent. They appear to be sort of more authoritative because they appear not to come from Monsanto, when in fact the documents show us that Monsanto has written them. And Monsanto uses the words ghostwriting and ghost wrote. You know, we have a scientist in Monsanto who bragged in his annual review that he, about ghostwriting a paper. So again, you know, it's a It's all been a long, decades-long strategy to deceive and manipulate and control the narrative on the science. And the chemical industry likes to say that its critics are anti-science, which actually is sort of the old, what is it, calling the kettle black or something, the pot calling the kettle black. You know, whatever it seems that they're actually engaging in is what they accuse critics of. Manipulating science, being anti-science. I mean, it's kind of a ridiculous argument if you think about it. They're essentially saying that the independent science is wrong and that we all should just trust, you know, the industry science, the people who are selling the chemicals, we should trust them.
Carrie, it's one thing to disagree with someone. It's something else to go out of your way to attack them, such as Dr. Seralini and others who did research, quality research on glyphosate to find out that it did cause mammary tumors after 3 months. And the studies up to that point were only 3 months. And I believe that you would have to be very disingenuous to know that your product caused cancer. But as long as you kept the research under 3 months, nobody would see that. But when the animals were allowed to live their full life, then they developed these tumors. And then, of course, his article was retracted. It was later reinstated. He sued for libel and won. That didn't make any of the news. Talk about the attack on scientists who have taken on the issue of finding the truth about Roundup.
Right. Well, this happens, you know, I think almost every time. I can't think of a time that it hasn't, when a scientist or scientific organization does research like Seralini did, and it comes up with findings that are not favorable to a chemical industry product like Monsanto's glyphosate, the industry goes on the attack. And Monsanto, in particular, works very hard to discredit, to smear the reputation of scientists who find, you know, problems with its product. And they did it not only with Seralini, and they did it very strategically. Again, we have documents where they talk about how they're going to go after him and try to get his research report retracted, but they don't want people to know that Monsanto's the one trying to get it retracted, so they want to make it look like it's coming from third parties. You know, we have documents where they have individuals that are favorable to them who are sitting on scientific journal editorial boards, including the ones that, you know, retracted the Seralini study. And we see recent examples of them trying to smear and attack these international scientists sitting on the International Agency for Research on Cancer, people from the National Cancer Institute and universities around the world, considered the elite cancer scientists that Monsanto has spent the last 3 years attacking and smearing and getting lawmakers here in the United States to help them and to basically threaten to strip funding from this organization. So, you know, if you cross Monsanto, if you come up with science that doesn't look good for glyphosate, you're going to get hit. And a lot of people have.
Finally, take a look at how the Republicans now are trying to defund a federal research on cancer and glyphosate that could prove a link, and they want to take that money away. That shows you how deep the influence peddling goes in government.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is particularly outrageous, in my view. The Monsanto, this all goes back to what I just was mentioning, the International Agency for Research on Cancer declared glyphosate to be a probable human carcinogen in 2015. And that was after it looked at, you know, decades of research and weighed it all and said should be rated a 2A carcinogen. And Monsanto went after them. And part of going after them was enlisting the help of House Republicans, Lamar Smith, Andy Biggs, and others. And just on February 6th, the House Science, Space, and Technology Committee that Lamar Smith chairs held a hearing pretty much to air, for no other reason other than to air Monsanto's complaints about this group, IARC, and to threaten to strip millions of dollars in funding from this group. And, you know, this is a time when one in two men are expected to be diagnosed with cancer in their lifetimes and one in three women, and pediatric cancers are on the rise. We certainly should not be threatening our cancer scientists and stripping funding from them. We should be supporting them. And this is so politicized. Monsanto has created all of these false narratives about supposed, you know, wrongdoing by these scientists at this agency, and they've fed them to Reuters and other news outlets. A lot of news outlets have not fallen for it, Bloomberg and Wall Street Journal, New York Times, but Reuters has written several stories basically hand-fed to them by Monsanto, smearing these scientists. And, you know, the stories aren't true. If you look at the documentation, you know they're not true. But it doesn't appear our lawmakers bothered to look at the documentation. They're just following Monsanto's lead.
I want to say thank you from this audience for all the good work your group is doing in keeping us informed. And you can read more on this if you're listening right now by reading Whitewash, The Story of a Weed Killer and Cancer and the Corruption of Science by my guest, Carrie Gillam, G-I-L-L-A-M. And she is with the research, she's research director of the U.S. Research director of U.S. Right to Know. And that Right to Know is a group looking after our interests. Thank you very much, Carrie. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
That's it for today. I want to thank you all for joining, listening in, sharing the information with others. Have a nice day.